Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events of our community here in Central Iowa. I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, along with engineer Mike Murphy and our Milford Township neighbor, Pat Schlerbaum. Greetings to you all, gang.
Greetings.
We're going to give Anna Banana a break today so the bunch doesn't spoil, and so she decided to split. We, this morning, are going to welcome our first guest, Dan Culhane, with the Ames Chamber of Congress. Ames Chamber of Commerce. Hello, Dan.
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
Oh, we're doing fine. I think our coffee hasn't kicked in yet here. So, to start off, I'd like to ask, how are our local businesses faring this holiday season?
You know, that's a really great question, and it's an important question. It depends on who you talk to. I think by and large, most of our businesses are doing fine. It's our small retail, it's our restaurants, it's our bars, our taverns and things like that that have struggled based upon limited capacity that they've been able to have inside their buildings. So no doubt that's been a challenge. You know, there has been relief assistance that came throughout the year. There's another round that was passed by Congress last night late that I think will be helpful, but a lot of our smallest of businesses need that help as soon as possible.
Yeah, I know I, for one, and I know others here and folks I've talked to have really tried to support our local efforts here, our businesses, our vendors, as much as we can. I do a lot of pull up to the curb to order out, those kinds of things, just to support those businesses that I had routinely supported in the past. With that, with these limitations, are there some examples of innovative ways that you've learned about or have helped share with some of our business folks to cope with this?
Yeah, you know, and I would offer that this was not a silver bullet, but I think it helped for a short time. The Chamber of Commerce did a gift card program. We did this back in April, where we raised a little over $30,000 to provide the last $10 of a gift card with a value of $30. So if you and I went online and bought a $20 gift card from the Chamber, from one of our businesses here in Ames or Stray County, you'd get $30 back. And that was underwritten by about 15 business sponsors who put money into this fund to help underwrite the value of those cards. We sold a little over 3,500 cards back in April and put a little over $100,000 back into our businesses, probably some of our most vulnerable businesses.
That's great.
Which was really great. Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun, too. It was very rewarding. But then we did it again here about 3 or 4 weeks ago. The Chamber put $10,000 into an account and subsidized, 1,000 cards. And so while it didn't go as far as it did in April, it was still another small shot in the arm for a lot of our businesses. So I applaud the businesses that underwrote these cards, but I really applaud the people that stepped up and bought these as well. Sure, they got a good deal. They paid 20 and got 30 back, but in the spirit of supporting our most vulnerable businesses, it was a great exercise and something that I think we'll probably continue to do at some level, at least around the holidays, again next year as well.
I mean, you talk about a community effort and community spirit. That really shows what kind of interest folks have here in supporting their local businesses, their local merchants. And boy, if we just have to keep pushing that message for our community that if you spend a dollar in the community, it stays in and rotates. Is that correct, or am I off base on that, Dan?
No, that's very correct. You think about there's a thing going around social media for the last 10 months now that says if you spend your money locally, there's a good chance it'll end up underwriting your child's soccer team or your United Way programs or your church or whatever it might be. And so without question, money that's spent with local vendors and local businesses gets plowed right back into the community. And so that has a very significant ripple effect. I'd say this too, you know, I really do applaud the people of Ames and Story County. I think people are very mindful of how important it is and has been to support our businesses. You know, we enjoy a lot of great things about this community and a lot of great restaurants and coffee places and things like that. And if we want them here on the backside of this pandemic, we need to support them now. I bought a few gift cards for some friends and family a couple weekends ago, and that matters. Even the smallest amount, that matters to our businesses. So I'd really encourage folks to do that if they can. We also reached out to a lot of our larger companies who historically might have a year-end lunch or dinner or something like that. And since people can't gather, we really encouraged our businesses to go out and buy gift cards for their employees so they could get something to eat on their own or at another time and underwrite, again, a lot of our smallest businesses in that regard as well.
No, I agree with you on that. I've also purchased gift cards for some of those folks that either they just have too much of the thing that you think they need. It's a little more flexible for them. They can choose to spend it however, and you're still supporting the community and showing you appreciate their services through the year. That's for sure. Talking about the smaller businesses, how have we done in especially Main Street Ames? I've noticed a few for sale or signs in the windows, but overall, where are we at with the business community here in Ames?
You know, I think our business community and the businesses that are here are very resilient. They've been through some pretty challenging times the last 10 months. And as a result, I think they're doing a very good job of hanging in there. I do think the last few weeks, things have ticked up significantly downtown. I think some of our smallest businesses have seen good traffic in spite of the pandemic. They've seen good traffic moving through their doors. But without question, there's some folks that are really hanging on right now. And we have seen a few restaurant, two restaurant closures that come to mind. Plus 39 up in Somerset shut their doors last week. That was unfortunate. Beautiful facility up in the Somerset location. And another sandwich shop over in West Ames also closed. But by and large, folks are hanging in there, and we've kept a pretty close tab on people. And we feel like with the resiliency they've shown, they should get through this, in particular if they can access some of this additional federal money that was approved last evening.
Boy, I feel for some of those. I've actually, my shadow has walked through the door on 39 for sure. I enjoyed that. That was bad news when I heard that. But anyway,
really is.
Yeah. There's a revitalization grant that has become available, and I know the city is looking into the Aquatic Center. Is the Ames Chamber, is there anything that you folks are looking at as far as trying to take advantage of that revitalization grant?
Yes. Yeah, so the Iowa Reinvestment District program is a program that we approached the city with a few months ago. The state did this probably 5 years ago. And you might recall the Hilton Hotel in downtown Des Moines was one of the focal point projects of that initial program. There was a number of projects that happened around the state. The former JCPenney in downtown Mason City was turned into a hockey arena. In Coralville, they built a new multipurpose arena that will house a minor league hockey team and also facilitate the University of Iowa's volleyball program. And so we thought there was an opportunity to do something here. And what got us most excited is this project that will occur along Lincoln Way between Kellogg and Clark along Lincoln Way. You might recall, or you might remember where the Starbucks is right now. It's one of the last buildings in that section of real estate. There will be a redevelopment project there. And once that project occurs, what the state will allow you to do is draw a circle around that essentially and create a district. And inside that district, all of the businesses that pay sales tax. So if you sell coffee, you're charging tax on that. those tax dollars, only the state's portion just the state's portion gets kicked back essentially to the city, to the local community, to pay for transformational projects. And so it's kind of a multi-layered process, but the first part of the process is the application process. It's a preliminary application where a community submits their idea to the state, and the state decides whether it's a good idea or not. And so right now, as I understand it, the city of Ames will be applying for a district, and the proceeds from that district could potentially fund an aquatic center downtown across the street from the DOT on some property the DOT currently owns. And there's also some other projects as well. The state wants to see transformational, you know, kind of landscape community changing projects. And so the city is proposing a plaza or a park space on the east side of City Hall. The major projects along Lincoln Way, and then the Aquatic Center.
So some of these projects, it sounds like if we can get the ball rolling on those, get accepted, that will attract other businesses. And it's like they say, you build it, they will come, kind of a concept, I think, is what I'm reading here.
You know, I think you're right. I think it could be really catalytic for downtown. And so as a result, we've got a unique opportunity as a community to access a program that could greatly fund a large portion of that aquatic center, which would be terrific for our community. There would be a private fundraising component to that. I'm currently working on that at the request of the city. And so we think that through a series of collaboration and partnership, we can pull this off. And so it's a very unique opportunity, and I'm thrilled the city of Ames and the mayor's office and the city council are pursuing this.
Okay, Dan, I've got one more question. I don't know exactly if this is good or bad news, but there was a executive order signed on December 11th that has to do with making December 24th a federal holiday. And I was wondering if you heard about that, seeing that that was done, and what kind of impact do you predict might have on our local businesses, and let alone the potential for deliveries on New Year or on Christmas Day?
Yeah, I had heard that, and actually, I've not heard much about it since that order was passed. You know, I think by and large, our businesses will be open. It's really incredible how last minute opportunities are available to people, and I think our businesses, in particular this year, will probably be open until the very last minute on Christmas Eve. And I think some may acknowledge it, but by and large, our businesses will be open every minute they can be.
I know that I'm just one of those procrastinators like a number of us, and I always find there's three or four things that I'm out there the day before trying to pick something up. So, boy, I hear you.
You and me both. Yeah. You and me both. And I only buy for one person.
Oh, you shouldn't have said that on air. Oh, thanks, Dan. Oh, do you have any parting words, any last words you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, I appreciate the opportunity to be on KHFI this morning. And I would tell your listeners much what I tell our members and I tell my team here at the Chamber is that, you know, this is a tremendous community we live in. And we're fortunate to get to be here and do the work that we do here. And while the pandemic has been completely awful in many regards, every day that I get up, I know we're one day closer to the end of this thing. And so I remain optimistic and firmly believe Ames and Story County's best days are ahead. So all the best to each of you for a great 21. And thanks again for having me on this morning.
Thank you, Dan. And, you know, I'll put a little extra in there. Today, the sunlight portion of our day starts to increase. So that bright light is there, and it's building.
I love that your glass is half full.
There you go. Thank you, Dan Culhane from the Ames Chamber of Commerce, and we hope to visit with you again real soon.
I'd like that. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Now we'd like to welcome Erica Place, the Outreach Coordinator for Story County Conservation. Erica, greetings.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I think the coffee's finally kicking in. I actually remembered that you're the outreach coordinator and not the volunteer coordinator anymore out there. So what's happening with the Story County Conservation Board activities during the holidays? And more importantly, what do folks have to look forward to as weather gets cooler?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you mentioned the winter solstice. That has been a day that I've watched on my calendar for a while now. I do every year. I anxiously await the turn that we make when we start to get more daylight. And we have a lot of different opportunities for individuals and families to enjoy that increasing daylight.
Yes.
We have some kids programs that are coming up at the end of January and a couple other opportunities that are more like on your own, which I think would appeal to people, kind of do on your own schedule sort of programs. One of those that I want to make sure I mention this morning is our Environmental Literature Club. And this is something that we've done for several years now and has been really popular. So you basically are able to explore different nature topics through reading.
Okay.
And then you get together once a month virtually this year with other folks to discuss what you read. And we have a great lineup of books this year.
I'm glad that you said it was other folks, because I could envision the environmental educators sitting out under an oak tree talking to the squirrels about a book.
Right. Probably not much conversation there, but we've had a lot of great feedback over the years about this being, you know, a place to really explore some kind of difficult nature topics, some really thought-provoking things. So, of course, this one is geared for adults, and the books will focus on the human relationship with the environment. And it's free to sign up for this club. The book purchase, or, you know, if you want to check it out from a local library, that is handled on your own, but the club is free. And I wanted to make sure I mentioned that this morning because the registration deadline is coming up. So if you want to get together with other folks once a month to talk about a book that you've read and just, dive into some deeper conversations about what nature means to us, the registration deadline is coming up. That's on January 15th.
Okay.
So again, that one is over Zoom.
And they can find out just going to your website the specifics of those things and registering for that.
Yes, definitely.
Erica?
And
Pat, go ahead.
Oh, Erica, this is Pat Schlarb. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You said you've had this a few years now. Are there any titles that come to mind of books that have been previously spotlighted, or anything that you're looking forward to? Any time, who does Erica Place read?
Well, I think the one that we have gotten the most comments on, I believe it was this last year that we read Braiding Sweetgrass, or maybe it was the first year. If you've not read Braiding Sweetgrass, highly, highly, highly recommend it. It was appreciated by all of the members in the Environmental Literature Club, and it led to some great discussions and just seeing things through a different lens. So if you've read Braiding Sweetgrass and you enjoyed it, that kind of gives you a feel for what other types of books might be a part of this literature club this time around. And the couple titles that are a part of this round are Crow Planet, Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? And Rising. And I've not read any of those, so I am curious to learn more. But yeah, great opportunity to kind of broaden your horizons. Again, you can do that in the comfort of your own home and then get together once a month and kind of recap on what you learned and have great nature discussions with other outdoor enthusiasts.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
I was going to ask Erica, you know, in the past we've had some ice fishing clinics and some things like that. For one thing, I know the ice isn't quite thick enough on McFarland or on Dakins right now.
Yes.
And there's essentially not too much water at Hickory until it fills. But are there plans for anything like that, at least to be able to get folks out there to enjoy that sport?
That's a great question. So you kind of alluded to something that is a challenge every winter when it comes to planning these sorts of outdoor rec activities for the public. We never really know when the conditions are going to be quite right for those activities. For example, we have a bunch of snowshoes just waiting for when we have enough snow for people to either come rent and use on their own at McFarland Park, or for us to schedule guided hikes with a naturalist. So snowshoe hikes, ice fishing clinics, those kinds of things we treat this year as kind of like a pop-up opportunity. So when the conditions are right, if a naturalist is available, those opportunities we're going to kind of, with not a whole lot of notice, blast out through all of the different outreach channels we can possibly find. Because, yeah, sometimes we just don't have a lot of notice that the conditions are right for a really fun outdoor activity. So
well, I was going to say, if that opportunity comes up, feel free to contact the station here, KHOI, and we'll certainly get some kind of announcement on that for you guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll be posting things like that on our website also, which is storycountyconservation.org. And, of course, on our social media sites. So, yeah, those fun things, those are kind of just pop-up opportunities. So be watching our website and social media or listening to KHOI for when those are available. We do have some things coming up that are not so dependent on the weather and actually embrace all the type of weather that winter has to offer. And one of those opportunities that's also been very popular over the years is something we co-sponsor with the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, and those are the winter hikes. So every week on Thursdays at 1:30, starting in the beginning of January, we're going to explore a different area in the county. And, you know, doesn't really matter if it's snowing, if it's raining. You just come prepared for whatever the weather wants to give you that day, and you still are going to get to enjoy either a walk that's good exercise or just kind of a social stroll and get to see some neat spots in the county with other people who are looking to explore new areas too. So,
boy, that's a great way to kind of fire up and get rid of the winter blues that some folks have this.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think oftentimes, you know, the winter keeps us inside for many reasons, and the winter hikes are just a great way to fully embrace, yeah, it's winter. Yes, it's cold. Yep, it might be snowing, but you can still get outside and go for a walk and get that sunshine and vitamin D and vitamin N.
One question I have, something that's dear to my heart, and that's have there been any plans made so far for the photography contest that you hold annually?
Yeah, we just last week, I believe, started really promoting that again. So it's an annual opportunity. We do this annual photo contest. It's open to amateur photographers only, but we get some absolutely amazing images from all different places in the county. Photos don't have to be taken in the county. For example, if you're taking a picture of an animal or a plant, we just ask that those are native to Iowa, but we also get great pictures that we use in our website or on social media of our parks. People have captured some beautiful images of sunsets, or this time of year, we've gotten some really great frosty images and just people enjoying outside. We've gotten some great candid photos of people just truly in the moment and enjoying some time outdoors. And all of those photos that are submitted, we will use in our different outreach methods. They'll appear in our newsletters. Again, I mentioned that our website and social media. We've also put them in brochures, or some of them have even been turned into ads in magazines. So it's a great opportunity to showcase how you get outside and what you find beautiful about the outdoors. And it bolsters our photo library so we can showcase the breadth of what is available in Story County.
My gosh, you make it sound like there must be a lot of beautiful photographs that are submitted. I'd hate to be a judge for that contest. that must be hard for those folks to be able to make a decision and not have a lot of people hate them.
You know, it's tricky. I chuckle because, of course, you are one of the judges in the photo contest. But we adore all the photos that come in. And, you know, it's not just adults. We get photos from kiddos. And what's really special, we started this last year. You don't have to spend money to get your photos printed or matted. You can submit all of the photos online through your phone. So you don't have to have a fancy camera or other, you know, editing equipment. Photos have been submitted and have won prizes taken on phones. So I highly encourage everyone to just give it a try. The next time you have a beautiful frosty morning or a sunrise just catches your attention, snap a photo and just start playing with it. You can really be surprised with what your phone is capable of capturing. And we just love seeing those, just all the different ways that people spend time outside and get connected with nature. Warms our hearts.
Yeah, that's some great information there, Erica. Do you have any last words? We're going to wrap it up here.
Just to go back to, you know, now the days are getting longer. We're getting more light again. We have some nice weather still in the forecast. I just encourage everyone to spend some time outside. It does a lot of good for your soul and your body, and we'll be anxious to see you in the new year.
Okay. Thank you, Erica. And I want to put in one last bit of information. We still have some of the hunting seasons going on some of the multi-use areas of the county properties, and we need to make sure folks wear bright colors and make noise once in a while. So if there is a hunter in the area, they're aware that you are there too.
Thank you for that, Mike. Yes, that's a great reminder.
Okay. Erica Place, Outreach Coordinator for Story County Conservation, thank you, and please join us again real soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
KHOI listeners, if you are just tuning in, I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, along with Pat Schlerbaum and engineer Mike Murphy. And at this time, we are going to join in with Wolf Osterreich. And hello, Wolf.
Good morning, Mike. Pat?
Yeah. Whereabouts are you today?
I'm on the south side of the South Lake, about one of the new park benches that were installed, I guess, yesterday.
Oh, out at Ada Hayden.
Yep.
What are you seeing, Wolf?
Bunch of Canada geese, mallards. There's four trumpeter swans, a family, two adults, two immature. And these two immature have green collars on them, 8P6 and 8P7. It's part of a multi-state study looking at the morbidity rates of first-year immatures.
Well, that sounds great. So each state has a different color than I would assume.
That I don't know.
Okay. Pat remembers from that. Perhaps not. I know Pat, you're muted.
Well, this is the first year for this study, so Pat's already retired from that. So
yeah, I can't hear Wolf, but the Iowa, if you're talking about the neck collars,
yes,
are red in Iowa. Seems like there were green patagial tags on the wings from Wisconsin, and I think Minnesota had black neck collars. Red ones are what Iowa was using in the modern era.
Although I think
there's a really interesting story.
Wolf is saying this is having to do with a juvenile study, so the colors, the neck bands may be a different color pattern.
Oh. I'm not aware of that study, unfortunately, no. But the cygnets, the young of the year, are the gray ones. So neck collar or not, they travel in family units. So quite often you'll have the cob, the male, and the pin, the female, and the cygnets all in one family unit of four to six swans. And Young of the year are gray, turning white in their first year.
Okay. And Wolf, you want to add to that?
Well, as I know, this is a new study, so that's why it's a different color. Because I saw the email early in spring announcing that for people to be on the watch for these young swans.
Okay. Yeah. So new studies, new colors, new information.
Right.
Okay.
So yesterday we had 14 swans, and when we did the Christmas count on Saturday, I only had four, whereas last year I had 76. So different conditions.
And it's different weather conditions because we know that there are a number of swan up closer to Webster City, and they just haven't had to move down in this area yet.
Right. Are you talking about Beamer's Pond?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I think there are maybe up to a couple of hundred there now from what I was told.
Yeah, up at Beamer's, yeah.
What else are you seeing, Wolf? What are you seeing for ducks? Is it primarily mallards now?
Primary mallards. I haven't gone all the way around yet or scoped everything. But yesterday I still had five green-winged teal, one common golden eye. We've had two female hooded mergansers, but I didn't see them yesterday. But they were seen Sunday.
Okay.
And so maybe three gadwalls that pop up here every so often.
So what about raptors? I know we've got eagles in that area, and of course the red tails, Cooper's hawks.
We had a pair that nested here, so they may still be hanging around. But I do see adults and immatures every so often. I do see an kestrel once in a while here at the park. A rough-legged was seen earlier in the month, but haven't seen one since.
So it was probably one passing through or is in the area and just isn't showing up when you're out there.
Correct.
Which seems to happen because you mentioned the Christmas bird count. And like you, the piece of the count circle that Pat and I covered routinely that we've been doing for years, we didn't see as many different species and some that we expected to see, but it seemed like it was a nicer day, so a lot of the birds that would normally be in certain areas, they just weren't. Did you find that in your area, too?
Oh, yes. Especially with ducks, I think I had four count week that didn't show up on Saturday. It's just amazing. Well, there's so much open water. I think last year at this time, we only had like maybe a hole in the ice where everything was concentrated.
Sure.
So it's just different.
And
South Lake hasn't frozen over yet, whereas the North Lake has.
Okay. So for our listeners who aren't familiar with these counts, it's called the Christmas bird count or the winter bird count. And this has been going on for decades.
121 years.
And it was started as an idea that people... the story I heard was folks that would routinely go out and harvest or hunt decided that they were going to go out with other bird watchers and naturalists, and they were just going to start counting on that day what was around. And it was one of the very first what I would call citizen science projects to collect data. And over the course of the years, there have been some trends seen, and there is some important information that comes from that. Would you agree?
Yes, but what I've heard is that it used to be tradition to go on Christmas Day and try to shoot as many birds as possible, and that's what they tried to stop.
And that, yeah, and I think they've probably done well on that, because I know a number of folks that partake, at least in our chapter, there's still a number who like to bird hunt, but that day we hunt with our binoculars.
Right.
Yeah. So there are other bird counts that take place in the state and across the country. So we're just one part of that. And you mentioned count week. So this obviously stretches over a couple of weeks.
Right. Well, the count itself starts December 14th and ends January 5th. And we had Ames on the 19th. The Sailorville was on the 20th. Boone County is on the 26th. Carroll County is on the 5th. Neil Smith is on the 2nd. And then in Des Moines, I don't know when their count is. But there's many counts across the state of Iowa.
Okay. So Any last words, Wolf, before we let you get back to your observations?
Just come out and enjoy the parks, whether it's Ada Hayden, McFarland Park, or any of them. Just come out and walk around. Keep your distance, though.
Yes, and keep your distance. Keep your mask on if you've got to be standing next to others. And enjoy the outdoors. Thanks, yes, Wolf. Thanks. And we've just been visiting with Wolf Osterreich, and who has been faithfully checking every day that he's in town for, I think, 5 or so years, maybe more. Ada Hayden.
23 years.
How many?
23 years.
23 years. Yeah, I'm just thinking of your retirement here, I guess. So
I would go out after
this scientist I know, Wolf Osterreich.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, thanks, Wolf, and we'll be checking in with you again in the future.
Okay, well, thanks. Have a good day.
Okay, Pat, we're going to go into the solstice program. You had an opportunity to observe yesterday. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I had the good fortune of being invited down to an area in Dallas County. With the Dallas County Conservation Board. Now, typically in a non-pandemic year, this would have been another public event. And they're, like all of us, adapting to the current conditions at hand. And it was an opportunity in a safe manner outdoors to record, the philosophy, the presentations that are normally given. We were able to do it in a safe manner and have that to share with people. You might have noticed there may be an increased focus on the Native American community. President-designated-elect Mr. Biden has nominated Deb Haaland, which is a Native woman from New Mexico, to head up the Department of the Interior. Now, this is a position that wouldn't have been too many years ago, even definitely 100 years ago. There was a different philosophy to working with our Native community. And quite often it was simply dominating and kind of trying to eradicate. And in recent times, thanks to President Jimmy Carter in 1977 had a freedom of religion proclamation that allowed Native American to partake of their sacred ceremonies, which would include solstice activities. And then in the 1990s, there was an awareness by a lot of the Native community that a lot of their spiritual and sacred ways were being sequestered or denied to other cultures, meaning African-American people and European, Caucasian people or Oriental people. I've heard the quote said that we had our Native red ways as red Americans, but there were Black Americans and White Americans and Yellow Americans that just so happened to be the four colors of their directions, of the black to the west and white to the north and yellow to the east and red in the south. And they opened it up in the 1990s. And it's in that transition now. But with a Secretary of the Interior designate, I think there'll be a greater acceptance. So yesterday, we went down to an area that Chris Atkins is the environmental educating coordinator for the Dallas County Conservation Board, and he kind of gives a background on a special area at a special site. And I guess I was really taken by the significance of this not being an isolated out in the hinterland of Dallas County. It's right by Redfield, Iowa, and it was kind of brought to mind that a lot of the Native American communities were along the rivers or in very popular areas. So the the solstice area, we're going to learn about a clock, and that is how they aligned the stones to designate where the sun rises and sets.
All right, so let's listen in.
Yeah, so this is called the Hanging Rock Conservation Area, and it is one of the gifts that REAP has given our state. This money was from the Resource Enhancement Protection Act that needs to be fully funded, but with the monies that were there, it allowed Dallas County to be competitive to purchase this land, and back in the early 90s, and without that money, this would be McMansion. It's beautiful as this is. Somebody with a deep pocket would have bought this. It'd be private land. And all of these stories that go back to the first stories of this place and the first peoples wouldn't be shared by the community. They would be have lost by just an individual here and stay off of my land. So it's good that it goes back to that idea that it's everyone's land. And so when the story of this astronomical clock and why we're here celebrating the sunrise at winter solstice, our longest day, goes back to when this area was then being developed after it was purchased, we invited a friend of both of us, Mark Edwards, who at that point worked for the DNR and was involved with their trails development, to ask him to come out and give us some guidance of what might be a good layout for this area. And when he got out and looked across this landscape, he said, wow, look at these big vistas that you have. The western horizon is so visible, the eastern. He said, when you get a view like this, he said, I think there was a clock here. And so he talked with one of our ecosystem natural resource people, Larry Golett, who's now the director over at Johnson County, and he said, Larry, when you guys were preparing this soil for the planting of reconstructed prairie to replace the row crops that had been pushed in here on these ridges, he said, did you find any stones? And Larry said, yeah, over on that hill, there were a bunch of small stones, and he said, you moved them? And Larry said, well, yeah. He said, well, I think there was a clock, and by his encouragement, we said, could we relearn that story? Could we change our perception of time? And so what's been interesting for me, Pat, is being involved in that process then of trying to relearn this story and start coming here on solstices and equinoxes and observing sunrise and sunset and inviting the public in, is that it's not only an ancient story, but it's a relevant story in our worlds as told by the probably the most brilliant mind of our time, Albert Einstein. And it's been a blessing for me because I'm chronologically challenged, and the idea of mechanical clocks and mechanized time and time being an artifact of humans, this reminds you that time is a celestial waltz between the sun and the earth, and to be part of that. But Einstein's words, what he's always said that ties to this, he said, space and time are modes by which we think, not conditions by which we live. And so space and time, that's a mode by which we inhabit a place and a presence there. It's not a condition by which we live. So to be a slave to a ticking piece of mechanical human construct, and it drives our lives, it's been such a gift to give away that and say time now becomes real time.
So let's back up a bit to the term clock. In a landscape sense, early people would align stones to direct their focus to the sunrise or the sunset.
So what first peoples were doing was obviously being able to be connected to the events of the world around them and the circle of seasons. it was important for them to be able to honor and recognize those days. So their clock, as it were started with us, where we took three stones, set one in the middle of the circle, and then I stood on the west side and Larry stood on the east. And on that first equinox sunrise, we aligned those three stones in a line pointing at that morning sunrise. And then when we stepped around to the other side, that evening sunset were marked by those stones. And so then we waited from the March day of equal day and equal night to the longest day, the summer solstice. And we came back with two more stones, and we aligned one marking the east and the west, and as you viewed it, up came the sun. And then we came back, and come September with fall equinox, well, what do you know? This works because it came up exactly on our equinox stones. And then today we put two more stones down to mark the sunrise and sunset of the winter solstice. And so therein we captured that old awareness, that old stepping inside the story and experiencing that memory. And it's become a blessing that we've shared for over 20 years now with people joining us here. Every equinox and every solstice, we have a celebration here. And we've had people over the years that have come joined us and marveled at what we are doing and enjoyed the connection to real time. But what's really been fun, Pat, then is that oftentimes I'll get elders that'll come. They've retired from the demands on their time, and they can be here at sunrise or sunset. And it's been fun in that I've had a number of ladies that were elders, and they'd say, "Christopher, you know, I've been doing this my whole life. I can tell you exactly where the sun comes through my kitchen window and where the shadows in spring are, where the shadows in summer. So I've been doing this. I didn't realize it." And it goes back to a tenet in education that I've learned from First Peoples, and that's, you're not teaching anybody anything here, Chris. You're only helping them to remember something they've forgotten. And that's a great example. Those farm wives were remembering something that wasn't really conscious, but when you pointed it out with these sunrises and sunsets here, they said, "Huh, yeah, I know this." And then there would be people who would come, Pat, to a couple years of solstices and equinoxes with me, and then I wouldn't see them at the mornings anymore. And I'd run into them in the community, and I'd say, "Hey, Pat, I missed you at solstice." And they say, "Ah, I don't need to come anymore. I built a clock in my own backyard. So I'm doing this on my land." And so getting people to be connected to that realness has been a huge gift that Mark Edwards started all those years ago when he said, "I think you guys need to think about bringing that clock back. There was one here."
So what are some of the beliefs derived from our longest night?
What's interesting for me is that, you know, most people don't even, you know, you ask somebody, "Where's the sun come up in the morning?" And they'll say east. And you'll tell them, "Well, you're right, 2 days out of the year. That's the equinox. That's when it comes up dead east." And anybody that's commuting east and west knows, you know, that's that time of year where you go, "Wow, that sun's right in my eyes." We've got this Jeffersonian grid of roads in Iowa that run due east and west and north and south. And so what they don't realize is that from that day when the sun is at east at 90 degree on the azimuth, today it's at 121. It's moved 31 degrees down the horizon. And if this were your first rodeo, one of the things you would have noticed, Pat, is, well, the sun keeps moving to the south. It keeps coming up later and setting earlier and getting lower and lower in the sky each day at noon. If this pattern continues, we all know the sun gives us life. We're all going to die. And so one reason that this was celebrated was that the elders who knew this pattern could tell everyone else, "No, today is the day, solstice. Sol means sun. Stis means to stand. This is the day the sun stood still. It went that far south, and it stopped and it stood still, and then it will begin its journey back north." And By March, it will hit 90 degrees again due east. And by June, it'll gone 30-plus degrees north of that for the summer solstice. But the idea that, you know, that was a celebration that we are starting a new cycle, and it's not a straight line, it's a circle of these seasons, and that it, you're reminded of that standing under the sky and watching the movements of the stars and the sun. And but to realize, yeah, this is a promise being made too, that it's not going to go any shorter. We at this point celebrate, this is where it stops, it gets no shorter than this, and now the sun will start getting longer.
And this is the time that autumn changes into winter. And people might think now's a good time to become spiritual, because obviously the sun did not continue to go away or leave us.
So, yeah, there's a lot of those connections, and it's fun to come and experience this. You know, somebody taught everybody this in sixth grade earth science. We all once knew this, but we never really knew it because it was all book learning. But to stand out either here joining us or in your backyard and start making observations of those movements is part of that journey. And what you're going to learn, Pat, is what you need to learn. So it's a different lesson for all of us. Luckily, I've had a chance to share it with a lot of good spirits like you being here with us. One of them, a story that shows you that something is going on here that is very spiritual. We had a former board member for Dallas County Conservation who always wished that she could come join us, but again, her job requirements, she couldn't really get here. So when she retired, she said, I'm going to come, and I'd always wanted to be there at sunrise with you. So she was here, and it was equinox, and we were waiting to watch the sun come up, and we were looking east as the horizon was glowing. And she goes, oh, look, here comes a bird flying right at us. I think it's an eagle. And I said, oh, Jean, I think you're romanticizing. That might be a crow at best, a lone Canada goose. And as it approached us closer, right synchronous with the sun kissing the horizon, that eagle came straight over our head, straight over the clock, and it was an eagle. And she laughed. She said, boy, you're good. That happens every time, right? And I said, no, Gene, it's never happened before, and you've never been here before. So what are you being invited to learn here, sister? What was that? She said, I don't know. I'll come back at solstice. So she was here summer solstice, and we kind of held our breath. And son of a gun, that next 3 months later, an eagle flew over us again at sunrise. And it's interesting, I said 3 months. What most people don't understand is months is a derivative of put an extra O back in. Month used to mean moons. And our calendar used to be based on moon cycles, and that's why, you know, leap year is here. I remember distinctly as a second grader, and it was leap year, and the teacher telling us, oh, children, today is February 29th, and it's leap year. And I raised my hand, and I said, who's making this up? How can you have a calendar when you can just make up a day and throw it in? I think that calendar is all rigged. And what's beautiful here is, Pat, is there's no addition of a day. We don't have to readjust our calendar. It is linked not to human construct, but to the earth and the sun and the relationship of the cosmos about us. So Gene came back, fall equinox, eagle, winter equinox, eagle. And on those three succeeding days, the hair was standing up on the back of your neck. You were thinking, oh, this can't really happen. And it's never happened again. But those four days of that circle around the sun, there was something there that I'm still, as we said, you're saying, you know, what about the spirituality and what are the lessons here? That's sometimes you get gifted and you think, I haven't figured this one out yet. So I'm still trying to grasp that. But that shows you that we're not alone here, and that there are other beings that are celebrating this with us, and magical place to be. But I hope some of your listeners will think, I'm not going to go to Dallas County. You don't have to. Find a place in your world that you can mark this and start observing it. You'll be amazed at how it changes the way you approach space and time, and also the connections and the feelings you have, and how much you'll start paying attention then to all the chronology of events throughout a given circle.
Which is a pretty good testing for a pandemic.
And why that's very apropos that you would say that, Pat, is today was the culmination. We have a Pray Awakening celebration every September that you've been a part of, and we've talked on your radio about it. This year, in August, we got together with our Native Council, principally Irma Wilson White and Robbie Knuth, and we said, we're not going to be able to do our celebration this year, but we don't want to just act like, well, we're doing nothing. What could we do? And Irma, in her guidance, she said, what everyone needs now is healing. And so she shared, and you can go to Dallas County's website and watch a video of Irma. She shared the traditional history of prayer ties, and then she did a tutorial on how to make a prayer tie. And she said, this year, Prayer Awakening is going to be a time of healing, and we're inviting you to, with yellow cloth, the color of healing, tie up your seven prayer ties, bring them to Keene, individually celebrate by hanging those in a cedar, and those will hang until winter solstice, and then those prayer ties will be taken down with tradition and taken to the fire that is lit to celebrate the new circle at winter solstice, and all those prayer ties will be offered up, and we burnt them this morning. And so you're right, you know, in this time of a pandemic and so much need for us to find a way to heal, this was a time where all of those traditions came back together. And not only did we celebrate Old Soul telling us, you can trust me, I will stay with you, we can also celebrate, you know, that your prayers for healing are being carried out across this landscape and listened to, and if we did it right, answered. Happy winter to you too, brother.
Oh, and that was Mike Hodlick, naturalist with the Dallas County Conservation Board, with a beautiful star song for our sun, our star, at solstice.
And Pat, thank you very much for that. That's very timely. And listeners, you have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org, and you can find links to our guests and the information you heard during this program. This program is engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. And it's produced by Lynn Carey, Ursula Rudenberg, and Pat Schlerbaum. You heard from Dan Culhane, Eric Place, Wolf Osterreich, and Pat Schlerbaum. I've been your host, Mike Metz. Please stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Our theme music, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Pat, would you please take us out?
Our membership drive continues, and we need your financial support. So please go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member of this fine community radio station. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And as always, we'll
see you again on the radio.
On the radio.